Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, May 12, 2015. South Sudan's parliament passes the NGO bill that might place new restrictions on activities of aid agencies.
The NGO should ensure that not less than 80% of the total number of the staff employed in the organization are South Sudanese. You cannot get cleaners from Kenya and come and work here. You cannot get messengers from Uganda and work here. We have a lot of people, we have a lot of educated people, we have graduates.
And two international aid agencies pull out of Unity State as fighting continues between SPLM in opposition and rebels and South Sudan government.
What will happen to the people is very hard to predict. Everything will depend from the security situation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's parliament today passed a bill that imposes enormous requirements on non-governmental organizations operating in the country. If the bill becomes a law, NGOs will be monitored by a government official, have to undergo regular audits, and make sure that 80% of their staff members are South Sudanese. Philip Thornaleu reports for VOA from Juba.
The NGOs bill was unanimously passed in its first reading by the 175 MPs who were in Parliament today. The bill calls for a host of changes to the way NGOs operate in South Sudan, including for a regulatory body to be set up to supervise the operations of non-governmental organizations, including those working in the humanitarian aid sector. Somas Wani Kundo chairs the Information and Communication Committee in Parliament. He says the bill obliges NGOs to give jobs to locals and has a way to making sure they do so.
The NGO should ensure that not less than 80% of the total number of the staff employed in the organization are South Sudanese. You cannot get cleaners from Kenya and come and work here. You cannot get messengers from Uganda and work here. We have a lot of people, we have a lot of educated people, we have graduates.
Kundu says the bill also encourages transparency and accountability by requiring the NGOs to publish how they spend money they receive from abroad. But he says the bill does not require NGOs to disclose who provides them with funding. The bill also exempts humanitarian goods being imported to South Sudan from taxation. And another clause in the bill states that all NGOs, including those involved in humanitarian work, will report to a government minister who will periodically update Parliament on the organization's activities. Kundu says these requirements are not meant to impede the work of humanitarian agencies, but to ensure NGOs abide by South Sudanese law.
When you're operating even in your own house, you must respect the rules of that house. You respect the rules and regulations so that you work together, because you are not an island. NGO is helping the people of this country. Then should work together with the people and the government for the smooth running of the work itself. But we are not going to dictate upon the work of the NGO. We are not going to control it, but they should work within the law.
Many South Sudanese depend on NGOs to meet many of their everyday needs, including medication, education, and even food. Even before South Sudan erupted in conflict 17 months ago, the government did not provide many of the essential services needed by the people, and the lack of service provision has become even more pronounced since fighting broke out in December 2013. It will not be clear how the bill will affect the delivery of essential services until it is implemented. No copies of the new NGO's bill were released to reporters. Kundu says the document will be made publicly available only after it has been signed into law by President Salva Kiir. Mr. Kiir is widely expected to endorse the bill. When he does, NGOs will have 3 months to register with the national authorities. Members of civic society attending today's parliamentary session declined to comment on the passage of the bill. They say they have to read the document first. For VOA News, I am Peter Tonaleu in Juba.
Yesterday, we told you that Medicine Sans Frontières and International Committee for the Red Cross, or ICRC, evacuated their international staff from Lare in Unity State because of heavy fighting in the area. Today, more international aid groups are pulling out of another part of the state, saying the situation has become too dangerous to maintain operations. One of the groups that is pulling out of Cochin County to the north of Lare is the International Rescue Committee, or IRC. The humanitarian aid group says one of its hubs at Cochin village was destroyed and thousands of families have fled to the bush to escape fighting between rebel and government forces. IRC coordinator in Cochin County, Nepta Joshek, says aid workers are concerned about the faith of people who have been forced from their homes. She says these people are now cut off from the lifeline provided by humanitarian agencies.
What will happen to the people, it's very hard to predict. Everything will depend from the security situation. If the situation will be stable enough in the next few weeks, we might go back.
Joseph says the fighting is spreading and could force more families to flee to remote areas where aid agencies will not be able to reach them. She says the humanitarian situation is made worse by the fact that South Sudan is in the middle of the rainy season. Samar Abdu is World Vision's acting country director in South Sudan. She says World Vision has also pulled staff out of Unity State, where heavy fighting is putting children and other vulnerable groups at greater risk.
We estimate that over 10,000 children under 5 could be at risk from malnutrition because we cannot reach them with
it. World Vision also works in Upper Nile State.
Most of our operations are ongoing, but in Unity State, we pulled out from one location.
Fighting in South Sudan picked up sharply after the warring sides failed to reach a peace deal at talks in Addis Ababa 2 months ago. The upsurge in fighting is mainly in Upper Nile and Unity States, the two main oil-producing states in the country, and the areas where the fighting has been concentrated since the country plunged into violence in December 2013. Western Bahr al-Ghazal state officials have declared a three-day mourning period following yesterday's morning killing of the paramount chief of Wau County and his wife. Angelo Bagari and his wife were killed in their beds in the middle of the night by unknown gunmen. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA News from Wau, police have not arrested suspects.
Authorities in Western Bahr al-Ghazal say the killings were politically motivated. In a cabinet briefing today, Police Acting Commissioner Deng Malwal said the suspect left a letter demanding that the state governor step down and that past police salaries totaling 3 million South Sudanese pounds be paid.
They are demanding to remove the governor and the Wau County Commissioner will be the deputy governor. The former speaker will be reinstated. Also, they are demanding their June salary to be paid as soon as possible. That means this rebellion is within the police force and headed by the sons of the area.
All that Wau County Commissioner Elia Camilo Dimo would say on Monday is that the gunmen are unknown.
It was around 15 minutes to 1 a.m. this morning that two gunmen broke into his home and shot him and his wife.
Officials say Chief Bagari and his wife, Mary Marnjo Voiku, died at the scene. Commissioner Elia said the couple's 18-year-old daughter was the only survivor. However, she was wounded by gunshots in the stomach and left arm. She was rushed to the local teaching hospital and is listed in serious condition. Doctors say her condition is improving. The chief's second wife, Teresa Achim, suspects the recent promotion of her late husband to paramount chief is the reason he was assassinated.
This could be because of the promotion which he got 3 days ago, along with a car given to him, because I don't see anything else that can cause someone to take his life unless it was this promotion.
The paramount chief's assassination has left many villagers wondering who killed Bagari, someone they remember as a wise leader. Neighbor Arcangelo Kunda Ugali says the chief was a good man who would always encourage villagers to cultivate their land.
With the looming hunger in the country, the chief was actually pestering State Agriculture Ministry to distribute seeds to everybody so that we could cultivate. This was the most important thing that I remember about him.
Western Baal Gazal Information Minister Mary Carlino says police are investigating the killings, and when suspects are identified and proven guilty in a court of law, they will be penalized.
The government of Western Baal Gazal condemns this barbaric and inhuman act by unknown gunmen.
Just last Friday, Western Baal Gazal Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan instructed the newly sworn-in chiefs, headed by Angelo Bagari, to convince youths across the state who have joined rebellion forces loyal to Riek Machar to return to Western Baal Gazal and engage in peaceful activities that will help develop the state, such as cultivating the land for food production. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in Wau.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, midwives and nurses complain they are overworked and underpaid. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's your best advice for preparing for job interviews?
The best advice would be just make sure that you are yourself. What I'm trying to say is you just have to be confident as you are. Do not be overconfident. And also make sure that you dress well, because first impression matters.
I think when everyone prepares for a job interview is to put in your best. And do not pretend to be who you're not. We all have weaknesses. You don't go about sending CVs that gives people the impression that you're better than what you really are.
My advice to everyone is to prepare for the interview, for the job, know the organization, know what they do, and expect a lot. When you go there, you just be yourself.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about midwives and nurses. South Sudanese health officials held their International Day of the Midwife commemoration in Juba today and used the occasion to say nurses and midwives are overstretched and unable to provide quality care to patients across the country. They are calling on the government and its health partners to better equip medical facilities and improve the welfare of health workers. For VOA News, Lucy Pony reports from Juba.
The president of the South Sudan Nurses and Midwives Association, Sake Jemelia, says nurses and midwives work in horrible conditions and face enormous challenges. In fact, she says, nurses and midwives represent 75% to 80% of all healthcare workers in the country, and when they are poorly trained or lack access to the equipment they need, they cannot improve maternal health or provide quality healthcare, two of the Millennium Development Goals. South Sudan's health ministry says there are about 700 registered nurses and midwives in a country of about 12 million people. Jemelia says nurses and midwives are overworked and underpaid.
Surely, the salary that we are getting, it's now in the black market when we compare the rate of dollars. It's like we are working with the $100, $150, which is very, very little. And this person needs to sponsor children in school. They will not be able to do that. So we are really advocating, let our employers look at it and improve our salary.
Lucia Thomas, the matron at Juba Teaching Hospital, the main referral hospital in the country, says most nurses also face language challenges. She says the majority of them, including herself, studied in Arabic and find it difficult to communicate in English, the official language of South Sudan. She encourages nurses to work on improving their English skills so they can understand doctors' instructions. And she says, although many nurses, midwives and traditional birth attendants may not have formal schooling, they are very experienced in dealing with patients and emergency situations. They are just too overwhelmed to provide quality services.
They say that our nursing care is not standard. I agree. It cannot be standard. The number of nurses working at the Juba Teaching Hospital is very little. You find two nurses caring for 60 patients. I was taught in school that one nurse should care for four stable patients, but unstable patients need four nurses each. What is happening here is not nursing.
According to Save the Children's 16th Annual State of the World Mothers Report, out of 179 countries ranked for best places to be a mother, South Sudan comes in close to the bottom at 159th. In South Sudan, a girl is more likely to die during childbirth than complete her primary education. The Director of Nursing and Midwifery at the Ministry of Health, Janet Michael, says over 70% of South Sudan's population is under the age of 30, which means most women are in their reproductive years. She says the government must invest in training midwives across the country to reduce high infant and maternal mortality rates.
This demands for more midwives to be trained and placed in every part of the country so that the services is accessible. In order for midwives to do their job effectively, facilities need to be appropriately staffed and stocked with the necessary equipment and supplies to offer appropriate services, including emergencies. Therefore, as the overarching theme goes, South Sudan needs more midwives now than ever.
The Health Ministry, in conjunction with its international health partners, is conducting training sessions at the Juba College of Nursing and Midwifery, as well as the Central Equatoria School of Nursing and Midwifery. But Michael says more must be done. She says many trained nurses end up employed in the private sector. Michael says the government should be hiring them.
When they finish, they also have to be employed. We can't train and not employ them. And they must get good salary. It is proved that midwives that are educated and regulated to international standards can provide 87% of the essential care needed for women and newborns. There is no cheap solution. The cheap solution has cost our mothers. That's why we are having very high mortality rates.
Michael vows that the Ministry of Health will do its best to improve conditions for nurses and midwives who provide the bulk of health care to communities across the country. She could not comment on whether the government plans to raise the salaries of nurses and midwives. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Juba.
Still on health issues, a team of volunteers spent yesterday cleaning the main hospital in Bor from top to bottom. As Jacob Achek reports for VOA from Juba, they were marking the World Red Cross and Red Crescent Day.
Amino Andrew Achek cheers the crew of Red Cross volunteers who gave Bor Civil Hospital a thorough cleaning yesterday. He says patients and hospital staff were grateful for the cleaning up and even chip it into help.
In fact, it was a nice cleaning campaign because we do it basically whereby there was a lot of patients. Because we introduce ourselves to the doctors, they know us, we are from South Direct Force. The cleaning campaign, it was like a join up, so it was a very nice cleaning, and the doctors were really appreciating us, the work we are doing.
World Red Cross Day is dedicated to the same principle as the International Red Cross Movement, which is honored. Those principles are to alleviate human suffering, uphold human dignity, protect life, and prevent emergencies and natural disasters such as floods, epidemics, and earthquakes. Jonglei State's Red Cross Director David Gaider says thousands of people in the state depend on Bor Civil Hospital for medical services. He says that's why the volunteers choose to clean this particular medical facility.
The sick people are very important for us, and the sick people are the most vulnerable people. If the environment around them is not clean and is not kept clean, it's also contributing, you know, to their health hazard. And that's why we choose Bor Civil Hospital to make sure that we create a good environment for the people who are sick.
But Guy says the South Sudan Red Cross support the hospital in Bor in many more ways than just cleaning it on Red Cross Day.
We are supporting the hospital through that. Other field like health education. Sometimes we provide also dressing material to the hospital. Sometimes also we assist we provide our volunteers that are more respect to go and support the staff in the hospital if there are emergencies that are beyond their capacity.
Dan Joling is the South Sudan Red Cross communication officer for Jonglei State. He says there is an important message in what the Red Cross volunteers did at the hospital in Bor yesterday.
The main purpose of doing it is to create awareness to the general public that good hygiene leads to good health.
In addition to promoting public health, the International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, helped communities in South Sudan that have been affected by the conflict that broke out in December 2013. It is working to reunite families separated by the conflict, promote respect for international humanitarian law, and support hospitals like the one in Bor. World Red Cross and Red Crescent Day is usually celebrated on May 8 to mark the anniversary of birth of the founder of the International Red Cross Movement, Henry Donne. Donne was one of the two winners of the first Nobel Peace Prize in 1901. A day after World Red Cross Day this year, the ICRC was forced by heavy fighting in southern Unity State to evacuate international staff members from Lair County. A spokesman for the ICRC in South Sudan said yesterday that the evacuation has left thousands of families in Unity State vulnerable to anger and violence. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. A strong earthquake struck Nepal today, killing at least 35 people after a devastating quake hit less than 3 weeks ago in the same region. Nepal's home ministry has also reported more than 1,100 people injured. The U.S. Geological Survey says the 7.3 magnitude quake was centered about 80 kilometers east of the capital, Kathmandu. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry meets today with Russia's President Vladimir Putin in the Russian resort city of Sochi, his first visit to Russia since relations soured over sharp disagreements on Ukraine and Syria. The State Department says they are to discuss a full range of bilateral and regional issues, including the Iran nuclear deal, Yemen, and Libya, as part of an ongoing effort to ensure that U.S. views are clearly conveyed. And finally, warring sides in Yemen are due to put down their arms late today and begin observing a five-day ceasefire in order to allow badly needed humanitarian aid to reach civilians inside the country. Houthi rebels, government forces, and the Saudi-led coalition that has been conducting airstrikes for the past 6 weeks in Yemen have all pledged to observe the truce, but there is no guarantee it will take hold. Heavy fighting continues in Yemen. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And finally, in Warab State, the assembly is condemning last week's arrest of two state lawmakers. Governor Nyandeng Malek ordered the arrest of Mayor Arik and Abuna Ahmed Met Kwal. Both were accused of mobilizing students to protest the implementation of Ministry of Education's new South Sudan curriculum and encouraging public protest about high prices. Santino Manut Ayuel has more from Juba.
The House unanimously approved resolution yesterday condemning the arrest and demanding the immediate release of the detained lawmakers. Legislators says the procedures for the arrest were unconstitutional. Hiding that, the article quoted by Governor Nyandeng Malek Delish has a basis for ordering their arrest was misinterpreted. Madodu Deng, Speaker of Warab State Legislative Assembly, says the move to release the two lawmakers is justified. It has just taken time to get this far.
Then I took the letter and came and immediately went to the House. It was late hours. I went to the house of the State Legislative Assembly advisor, legal advisor. So it was too late. We couldn't do anything. On Friday, the legal advisor went to Goryal to open a certain meeting of the department. So I was waiting for him so that he come and give me his legal opinion so that by Monday, as today, I could respond to the letter of the governor. But unfortunately, late hours on Friday, I was informed that the two MPs were arrested and were taken to the office of the National Security.
Tokyong Magol, chairman of Warabu State Legislative Assembly Security Committee, says he too supports the official condemnation of the lawmakers' arrest.
The assembly is working according to the law. The article quoted, Article 63, sub-article 1, does not allow any member of the assembly or any stakeholder to be arrested just rashly like that.
He says while the assembly is not obstructing the governor from quoting any article, the quotation in question was misinterpreted.
It is not procedural to arrest an MP and waive the immunity before it is brought to the assembly to approve the allegation. If the two MPs were caught red-handed doing that crime, the assembly have got no right to condemn the arrest of the two MPs.
Nyandeng accused the two lawmakers of organizing a protest against the state government about the ongoing food crisis. Prices for basic food have skyrocketed in recent months. The two lawmakers were also charged with supporting students in recent standoff between local authorities and Kwajuk National Secondary School students. The students are forced switching to the new curriculum developed by the South Sudan Ministry of Education, which requires students to sit a fourth year. Under Sudan curriculum, students finalize secondary school studies in 3 years. Some Warabu State Assembly members acknowledge receiving a letter from the governor seeking permission to arrest lawmakers but deny approving the arrest. Speaker Deng says the governor handed him a letter seeking permission to arrest MPs. Upon receiving the letter, Deng said he asked governor why the two MPs were not arrested at the scene of the crime as stipulated in the constitution, but the governor did not answer. Madot says he gave the letter to the assembly's legal advisor on Friday, but before the advisor finished investigating, the two MPs had already been rounded up.
I told the governor that if these two MPs were found mobilizing the students and the detainees and Mayangumel, why were they not arrested immediately? This is where this article is applicable.
There are no signs of unrest in Kwajuk, although riot police and other security operatives were dispatched around the town yesterday as precautionary measures. For VOA News, I'm Santino Manuda Ayuel in Kwajuk.
That report by Santino Manuda Ayuel in Kwajuk brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Abie Pin by Abie Jaspan. We have been listening to Abie Jaspan with that song about the disputed area of Abie. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Pandit.